Welcome back. I'm Ian Marcus. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Andy Kroll, a staff reporter in the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones magazine and an associate editor at Tom Dispatch. He has an article at Tom Dispatch and the Huffington Post, Getting Rolled in Wisconsin, Why Electoral Politics Sold Out the Popular Uprising in the Badger State and Why It Is Not All Over. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andy Kroll.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us, Andy. And you feel that the Wisconsin uprising, the movement's mistake, was letting itself get channeled solely into traditional politics, and that the electoral politics were its undoing.
Yeah, you know, I've been covering what's going on in Wisconsin since the big popular approach, the big uprising. You know, hundreds of thousands of folks occupied the state capitol there and then filled the streets around the state capitol in Madison. That was started in February of 2011, and I've been reporting on the state ever since. The victory for Governor Scott Walker there in his recall election this past Tuesday was sort of a chance to look back at 16 months of politics and protest and just sort of grassroots fervor in the state. And what I was left with and what I got from talking to a lot of people there was that the decision to take this incredible amount of raw energy and anger and disillusionment about the direction in which the state of Wisconsin is now heading, this anger, was ultimately put into a form of, channeled into the same kinds of politics that we see, throughout the country. And it'd be kind of put into a box and put into a very narrow sort of place with recall elections last August of some state senators there, and then again this spring some more recall elections of the governor, the lieutenant governor, and state senators. And I found a lot of folks who were really turned off by that and just felt like what began with such promise and really, it seemed to be bound by only the imaginations of the people who created this protest just turned out to be the same old political campaigns and debates, and they were left essentially empty-handed at the end of it all.
But how do you or would could you stop Governor Scott Walker's policies? What other means are they to stop what he is doing and what the people who funded him, like the Koch brothers, are getting through their support?
There are a lot of different ways outside of politics. I mean, there were many, many discussions last year about the virtues of direct action, nonviolent action, whether it would be organizing strikes through the labor unions in the state. And in fact, there were some small pockets of employees around the state who did do a strike. It wasn't the big sort of general strike that it was. There are forms of monetary activism, choosing not to do business with certain, with supporters of the governor, choosing to pull your money out of banks that support the governor. And then there are other forms of just people-powered protesting, whether it's another occupation of the Capitol, whether it is organizing some sort of grassroots effort to just demand that the governor back down on the policies or repeal the policies that he created. I mean, I think that the energy and the sort of the activism that we saw and that captivated so many people in the winter of 2011 in Wisconsin, that was sort of pulled back and taken away from something exciting and imaginative and something that we hadn't seen in a long time, and it was just put into the same sort of political campaigns that we've seen before. And it's important to know that defeating Governor Walker by recall wasn't the only way to try to affect big change there. That was the path that was taken, but he is a human being. He is a politician, and he answers to certain people, and there were other ways to affect his agenda without going straight for him and trying to oust him via this really complicated and difficult recall process.
Well, that's certainly, a number of people have said that that was the problem, that it was that the recall itself was a very high bar. Now, I've talked to a lot of reporters and documentary filmmakers who covered the recall election, and we know that the National Democrats and the White House didn't support it. They didn't think it was the right fight. But I was told that the organization on the other side was amazing. They weren't going to let Walker go down. That that Karl Rove's group and the group that the Koch brothers fund, Americans for Prosperity, had convoys of buses taking Tea Party people from one rally to the other. So in terms of the ground game, there's just no comparison. And when you learn from exit polls that one third of the union families voted for Walker, and one third of the union members voted for Walker, and one half of the union families voted for Walker, then you have to ask yourself, what happened to all that energy from all those hundreds of thousands of people in the streets?
And I think those numbers reflect in part a general sort of disagreement or an unease about the recall process. I mean, I talked to Wisconsinites in the state who didn't support Walker, who did support Walker, who all of them said that they felt the recall was too much, that it was unfair, that you know, for all of their disagreements and anger at the governor, throwing someone out of office after 16 months on the job just didn't sit right with them. It clashed with their sort of Midwestern earnesty or belief that the guy was elected by the people of Wisconsin and he should at least have the time that he was allotted as governor the first 4 years to have the job. And people were just sort of generally offended by the process. And I think, you know, if the path of the recall had not been chosen, and instead the folks who filled the streets and filled the Capitol Rotunda in February channeled that energy into just sort of a more grassroots movement used to pressure state lawmakers, used to pressure the governor, used to pressure the lieutenant governor by various, you know, by direct action, by monetary activism, by any number of ways, maybe they would have had more of an effect. I mean, now they have a Republican governor who is incredibly emboldened, who has an incredibly deep bench of wealthy donors in state and out of state, and he has the wind in his sails, and Democrats are demoralized and, you know, pretty much left empty-handed after, you know, 9 recall elections last year and then 8 more, I believe it was, this year. So 15 recall elections and not really left with much at all, except for an opponent who is as confident and as well-funded as he ever was.
So again, I'm speaking with Andy Kroll, who's a staff writer with the Washington Bureau of Mother Jones. He has an article at the Huffington Post and Tom Dispatch, Getting Rolled in Wisconsin, Why Electoral Politics Sold Out the Popular Uprising in the Badger State and Why It's Not Over. I have a general kind of question about why, and I've spoken to a lot of people in the Occupy movement, and why they consider electoral politics irrelevant. I don't know what else is the purpose, though, of a popular uprising but to change the politics of a country? What, how else can political a political reaction to a current situation not be political? In other words, what other reactions are there? I mean, unless you just want to be a protester like the Tea Party people are protesters, but they actually get themselves elected. And they're still protesting in the House, and they're not. They don't believe in compromise or working in a parliamentary system. But nevertheless, at least they've got themselves elected. I recall after the Vietnam War, this massive popular uprising against the Vietnam War that was undeniably political and powerful. That the minute that Nixon ended that war, that entire movement went away. But conversely, on the other side, those people that, like Mitt Romney and like John Roberts and Sam Alito in the Supreme Court, those people that were appalled by the student demonstrations, they were all organized by the Powell memo of 1971 that organized think tanks like the Heritage Foundation, the Cato, and others to change the politics of this country in reaction to the student movement that vanished.
Mm-hmm. It's obviously, you make a great point. There's a great history there, especially, you know, the Powell memo. You know, the key distinction that I have, and the reason and the focus on Wisconsin, was you can't avoid, you know, a popular movement like this cannot avoid politics. You cannot completely dismiss it and say that we're going to, politics is not going to be part of what we do. Because, like you say, politics is where, you know, the policies are made. Politics is where the sausage is made, and the policies that were passed over the last 20 and 30 years are contribute to the staggering income inequality, for instance, that we have now. And so politics is not to be ignored. My point in Wisconsin is that you can influence policy without narrowing yourself or putting yourself into the box of campaigns and recalls and having to basically pin your hopes on a single candidate, as they did in the Walker recall. You had this whole movement, essentially, and the candidate, the standard bearer for them became this guy, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, and frankly, he was not a popular figure at all. And so, we saw in the Occupy movement last fall an incredible shift in the debate in this country, attributable, I think, in large part to the Occupy protest popping up around the country, which was that the debate shifted away from austerity and deficit reduction, and it became more about income inequality and the hollowing out of the middle class. And I think that these popular movements can influence politics, can influence elections, can influence the making of policy without becoming, without forcing themselves into the narrow confines of getting behind, giving themselves to a candidate and getting into recall elections and having to fight a bitter primary election like we saw in Wisconsin that divided this movement. You can move the dial of public opinion. You can move the dial, as we saw with the conservative movement, as you mentioned. You can move the dial and get the results that you want without squeezing yourself into this sort of narrow process, which I think is what we saw in Wisconsin.
Well, Andy, I thank you so much for joining us. I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I appreciate you joining us here today, Andy Kroll.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Andy Kroll, a staff reporter in the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Martha Jones Magazine, and he has an article at Tom Dispatch and the Huffington Post, Getting Rolled in Wisconsin, Why Electoral Politics Sold Out the Popular Uprising in the Badger State and Why It's Not All Over. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Chris Scheid, Kristen Vasquez, and Farhan Mohammed. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.